I haven't read a script in a lot of years. And I need to read this one because I didn't write it. For this... Wait, you can't see me behind this, can you? The beginning of this I wrote myself. Today's power is called renunciation. This is our 11th of the 12 Divine Mind Faculties. Next week, we'll complete the series with the power of life. But the first week was faith. Faith in the center, the pineal gland. It's our yes power. Now I had will behind the left eye. My willingness to carry out what I'm saying yes to, positive or negative. We can use the powers, we can misuse the powers. It's just the way it is. We can use God, we can misuse God. It's all still all God. And then understanding behind the right eye there, because understanding is the worker power. You know, will is the executive power. Understanding knows how to get it done. Then we come up here in the middle of the brain, we have imagination, or the third eye, it's also called imagination. Remember, imagination is what turns obstacles into opportunities. And then we go back here to zeal. Zeal, what lets me, it's my excitement power. It's what lets me be excited to be me. It is my enthusiasm power. I like that I get excited about whatever project I'm doing, whatever I'm thinking about. And when I use it properly, then we come into the throat. It's the power of power. It's our word. It's our, because our word has tremendous force. In case you don't know that, it's because it's carrying out a thought. And thoughts are so powerful. Then we come down here, heart, love. And we mixed love with wisdom here in the solar plexus because they need to work together, love and wisdom. Without the companionship of the two of them, one is too flighty, one is too brittle. And so we need the two working together to carry out our yes, what we're saying yes to. And we come down here to order here, the ninth power. And order, there's always an order between our thoughts, our word, and our action. And we go around to the small of the back, and we have strength. Our strength, what did I say last week? Our strength, really, our greatest strength is our ability to be quiet, to be still, when all around us is chaotic or insane. Strength allows us to be still and know. And then today we are, well, we're down here in the rear end. we're down here. It's elimination, the bowel area. Elimination, this power. It's also known as renunciation. To renounce that which no longer works for us. It's all a process. And what we're trying to do is align all 12 powers to really align with our Christ mind. And that was what Charles Fillmore's goal was. Before him, M. F. Curtis Hopkins was big on the 12 and the 12 disciples and what have you. The number 12 is such a number of completion. And so number 11 here, renunciation, to renounce. To realize, to get thee behind me, Satan. I don't need you anymore. I don't need the egoic stuff. I don't need that now. Last week, I needed you fine. Today, not so much. Last week, maybe 40 days ago. 40 days ago, 41 days ago, I could use you. But that's why I had to go into the wilderness. To renounce what doesn't work within my mind, within my thinking. So to do all this, faith and willingness are key to the renunciation required for awakening. Now I'm going to read the metaphysical meaning of renunciation, which is a letting go of old thoughts in order that new thoughts may find place in consciousness. A healthy state of mind is attained when the thinker willingly lets go of old thoughts and takes on the new. This is illustrated by the inlet and outlet of a pool of water. The center of renunciation, sometimes called elimination in the lower part of the abdomen, carries forward the work of elimination of error thoughts from the mind and waste from the body. Now, here is the script I'm going to read. And the other night was the winter solstice, as you know, the 22nd, the longest day of the year, shortest day of the year, shortest day. It felt long. And I looked up solstice, winter solstice, and what I came up with was a script that Eric Butterworth had done many years ago. You didn't read the script, did you? Good. I didn't want to do your act. Eric Butterworth, who here knows who Eric Butterworth was? Okay, Eric Butterworth was there's not a lot of Unity ministers that really have made a mark in the world that are well known, made it to Oprah. Eric Butterworth, when I met him, he was minister of Unity of New York at Lincoln Center. And he had 3,000 people a week. He used to fill Carnegie Hall every week. And Eric, his big book was Discover the Power Within You, and that's the book that got him on Oprah. Because it's so simple. I highly recommend, if you've never read it, I highly recommend that you read it. Because it's just so easy. It explains so much. And so I by the time I met Eric, he was having difficulty speaking. Didn't stop him from trying, but he had a difficulty communicating. He could still write like nobody's business, but physically his vocal stuff was falling apart. But I liked him, and it was nice to go there. His associate minister was the funny one, and that's the one I responded to more. And then the associate minister is the one I was participant when we broke off from that church and started a new one in New York. And I got to experience leadership there and fall into where I got here. So this was written in 1971, and it's called Winter Solstice, Rebirth of Light. Tomorrow, now he wrote next Sunday, but that's tomorrow, at this point, the Christian world will celebrate Christmas, and any child will tell you that Christmas is the birthday of Jesus. But having said that, he will very quickly change the subject to a more vivid interest in Santa Claus. I would. Anyone could tell the Christmas story of shepherds and wise men, or Mary and Joseph in the inn that had no room. We remember it well because of the little Christmas creches that we assemble in our home or feature in display windows. And in a way, this creche is symbolic of the whole paste on piety of the holiday season, which is so soon packed away with ornaments and tinsel after the perfunctory practice is dutifully fulfilled. So what is Christmas? To the Orthodox devout Christian, it is a sacred season, another in the long line of ecclesiastical observances, which is accepted as a mystery, which is not understood, but accepted without question. To the nominal Christian, it represents a welcome break in routine, a time for family gatherings, a time for exchanging gifts and cards with a goodly amount of pressure and resistance, and a season for good food and convivial gatherings, and often the license for irrational behavior. As Jim Bishop puts it, for kissing the wrong person under the mistletoe. To the non-believer, the whole thing appears rather ridiculous. A puzzling superstition built around folklore and legend, strongly perpetuated by the self-interest of shopkeepers and the holiday of workers. I don't want to be too hard on Christmas customs, Eric says, but I do want us to take this time to see how prevalent in society and in the consciousness of humankind is the tendency to lose the real meaning of profound experience by settling into ritual and habitual practice. This is the whole history of religion, where the spirit is buried in story and the truth is undiscovered through perpetuation. So let's take another look at Christmas, probing deeply into its background and roots. The first thing that becomes obvious is that Jesus' birth had implications far beyond the dramatic beginning of a religion. This has been our problem. We have started with the religion and then have moved backward in an attempt to prove its validity. The universe is too grand and intelligent to be encompassed by one religious concept and limited to one birthday of a king. From earliest days, man has sensed to the universal order, has intuitively known the meaning of and the need for transcendent light. In the most pagan cultures, there has been this emphasis on light and an annual celebration of the rebirth of light coming at the winter solstice, the time when the sun is at its greatest distance from the celestial equator, which is about December 22nd. So it is assumed that the birth of Jesus took place at this time, for it was symbolic of the rebirth of light, an actual reinfusion of the planet with an energy force, the demonstration of an annual purification process which brought vibratory rhythms to lift the earth to the kind of peace on earth, goodwill to men sung by the heavenly hosts. The startling thing to those who are willing to face facts is there are no records that will tell definitely when Jesus was born. Not even the year is sure, though most careful scholars say that there is an error of 4 or 5 years and that Jesus was probably 4 or 5 years earlier. So it's actually 2029. The fact is that long before the birth of Jesus, there had been festivals of winter solstice in all cultures. The Romans observed it as Saturnalia. It's your new drag name. Saturnalia. Saturn was the old man who lives at the North Pole who came to the children with a sprig of evergreen, hence the Christmas tree, and who obviously is the pagan figure that led to Santa Claus. During the Roman Saturnalia, there was a festive and even orgiastic celebration which began on solstice and lasted 7 days. Houses were decorated with laurels and evergreens, presents were exchanged, and all sorts of games were played. Work was suspended, schools were closed, no punishments were inflicted, and no wars were fought. Doll fairs were held and toys were given to children. Thus, when the Christian world and the Roman world were united, the customs of both were dovetailed together. The beautiful idea of the rebirth of light, portrayed so vividly by the nativity story, was soon enmeshed in the various traditions and custom, a materialistic involvement. The whole Christian experience was poured into the Roman vessels. The church, in its simple, stark, sincerely spiritual dedication, was thrust into the Roman temples of statues and candles and ceremony, and thus the consciousness and experience of Jesus and the movement he touched off was buried, to be discovered and kept alive only by mystics in isolated monasteries down through the years. Thus today, when the world stands in need of light, there is a need for a renaissance, a revival of the early Christian experience, a return to meanings within form, to commitment beyond doctrine. The great idea that Christmas should symbolize is the rebirth of light into the world and the awakening in many to the dynamic potential of his God self, with its inherent promise that as men act in love and goodwill, there can be peace on earth. There's a fundamental unity of life. Man is intended to live in harmony with all nature. This harmony has been broken, so man lives in a fallen state as a result of the breaking. At the time of the winter solstice, if we really open ourselves to the cosmic aspects of the events, there is a Christ or world ritual involved. There is a profound truth concealed in the legend that tells of even the lowly animals coming to participate in the nativity. Every life wave on earth is literally filled with exaltation when this flow of divine light penetrates to the heart of the planet. Because from the lowest to the highest, each unit of life receives this inflow according to its capacity to respond. The question is there room in the manger of your heart? Can you let the light be reborn? As the poet puts it, thou Christ 1,000 times in Bethlehem be born. If he's not born in thee, thy soul is all forlorn. John was singing of this experience when he says, in him was life, and this life was the light of men, of people, and the light shineth in this darkness. The true Christ Mass should lead to a new kind of commitment to those who are sincere in letting the rebirth of light happen in them. The universe is practically reshaped around us by the power of ideas. Surely then, man's approach to this birthday festival can be transformed into the idea of the rebirth of light by the persistent seeding of the mental atmosphere with ideas of its essential significance. How can we change the ideals and practices of the world? I am only one, but I am one. I can't do everything, but I can do something. What I can do, I ought to do. And what I ought to do, by the grace of God, I will do. Every year at winter solstice, it is the fullness of time for the world. It is like a divine appointment. And the question is, will we keep the appointment? The angel voices are singing. Are we listening? The light is dawning. Are we seeing? The drummer boy is drumming. Are we? Are we pounding our drum to announce the awakening of our Christ within? As Shaw once said, God has created a world so wonderful, only our blindness and ignorance can keep it from perfect expression. Every year at the winter solstice, every season of Christmas, there is a force of cosmic energy and light that is bombarding the planet Earth. And only our inertial involvement in the paste-on trappings of the annual holiday can keep us from discovering and giving birth to this depth of light within us. Christmas, then, should not be a backward glance, but a forward look. It is a prophetic day, or should be. The birth of the Christ, the rebirth of light, belongs to an order of life not yet attained, a glimpse of a race of men yet to be. Christmas is more than a day of outer celebration. The true Christmas knows no season. It is not a creature of clock or calendar. It is not a day that comes and goes. It is not even the commemoration of an event long ago. Christmas, whenever and wherever the human heart touched by him or her whose ever-living spirit is the ever-giving spirit, is moved to the expression of unselfish love. And thus, experiences are the true solstice of the spirit, the rebirth of light. So each and every one of you, now that you have delved into esoteric meanings in cosmic processes, I say, happy birthday to you. And may your birth of light bring a new measure of light through you into the world, that to the extent that you have experienced the winter solstice, to that degree, there is a rebirth of light into the world. And thus, because of what you are and do, there is a fullness of time for the whole race of people. That's what Eric Butterworth had to say. What I realize is, he also said, happy birth of light day. I say the birth of Jesus is really insignificant. The life of Jesus is significant. The example of what we know is significant. The birth of Christ within is very significant. The Christ birth within him is what makes him both interesting and powerful. The resistance to the Christ awakening in ourselves is what makes his message frustrating. If we resist who and what we are, what is attributed to his awakening, to what the words that he's credited for, it makes them just guilt-inducing. But if we truly want to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand God, if we want to look at our own thoughts and say, wait a minute, there is good that can be done by me. There is good that ought to be done by me. What is that good? And I go within, my example, my experience has been, I've gone within and I've asked, what is the good that ought to be done by me. Well, for all of us, it's very different. We're all guided differently. Each of us have professions that serve humankind. Yes, and I know here at Unity of Norwalk, a lot of people sing a song. They sing lots of songs, and that is part of the good that is done by them. But working for the phone company is also the good that is done by you. Working for in real estate is part of the good that is done by you. Working for a church is part of the good that is done by you. Because how do I know? Because you are divinely guided to do the work that ought to be done by you. Every time you are guided to experience forgiveness, it is the resistance that puts you in hell. The openness is like, oh God, I didn't want to hear that, but fine. If it sets me free, if it sets us all free, let's do it. And then we do it. From the early days of my healing, there were people, you know, my parents, I thought, I don't want to forgive them. I want them to make what happened not have happened. That never works out. That never brings peace that I am promised. The peace that passes all understanding. But you know what does? It's staying open to new revelations of what has taken place. In the 12 steps of AA, in the big book, there's a passage that says, an acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. And when I accept, I realize there are no mistakes in God's world. And it's a process to realize there are no mistakes. No, really? None? No mistakes, you tell me. And so, if I am to change the way I view something, if I am to become willing that all beings be happy, joyous, and free, now I'm on point with the message of Christmas. Now I am on point. How will you sound your horn? How will you bang your drum? How will you let you be you? How will you let your Christ nature awaken and sing? Some of you do it in so many ways already. Now, what's the next thing? What's the next way of looking at life, at yourself? We didn't walk up those steps today just to make our misery more manageable. We walked up those steps today to have a reminder, oh, the Christ in me is awake now. It's Christmas Eve, which is so hard for me to believe. How did Christmas Eve get here already? Wasn't it just September? How could tomorrow be Christmas Day? The thing is, and it only has the meaning I give it. So we're here to celebrate Christmas Eve and celebrate the awakening of the Christ within us.